Bill, you're now the assistant to the bishop for administration.
Yes.
How's that been?
Big learning curve. Lots to learn. And as the saying goes, you've heard me say this before, it's always impossible to know what you don't know. So, and usually that sneaks up on me, which caused me to go back and learn a little bit more. But the transition, I think, on the whole has been pretty good. Bob's been very helpful in the transition, both in terms of anticipating the kinds of things that I'd need and also being available if I've had questions or say, how do I go about doing this? And he's been very helpful, especially in the area of dealing with immigration for some of our clergy who have either come into our conference or in the process of taking an appointment here.
Now, these 6-plus weeks that you've officially been the assistant to the bishop for administration, in this time, have there been any surprises?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I was referring to in terms of not knowing what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So learning some things about the position that were maybe less visible before, for me, still not knowing what I don't know is everything that's required for getting ready for annual conference. Last year, I came in and probably the last month and a half of that, but by then, everything was pretty much set. So I'm kind of looking forward to having the first meeting with Sessions Committee and kind of outlining the process, seeing how that takes shape, and hopefully maintaining the high quality, working with others that we've experienced in the past, especially last year. I thought we had an excellent annual conference last year.
Your appointment preceding coming to this office was the superintendent of the South Central District.
Yes.
How was that chapter of your ministry?
It was good. I'd never seen myself as a district superintendent, I'll be honest. But like all of my appointments, it's probably not one that I maybe would have sought out, but after I've completed it, especially after I've completed it, I'm glad that I did it. The other superintendents around the cabinet table are excellent colleagues and friends, and as that cycled through the different people I had the privilege of working with, that was wonderful. Two bishops who I have great respect for, that was wonderful. And probably the best thing about it was trying to form a partnership with the district churches, pastors and laity, and having the privilege of working with Paul Smith and Sue Booth. I feel like we had a very good district ministry team, and I really love being part of a team that functions well.
You said that you had not imagined that you would be a superintendent at some earlier point in your ministry. Over those years as the superintendent of the South Central District, how did you see yourself growing or evolving?
Well, that's a good phrase, evolving. Part of it was having to enlarge my view a bit. And I don't think I've ever had, you know, an overly too narrow a view in terms of the church. I've always been connectional. But it does change the perspective you have away from a congregation or community to a larger area. How can we facilitate more working together in order to accomplish the mission? That for me was probably the biggest growth area in realizing it really is about making disciples for Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. And that is the end goal, not helping a church thrive, not helping a congregation meet its budget or goals, but it's about the larger picture. That's really what I've grown in my understanding of what our true call to faithfulness is about.
Speaking of helping people to become disciples of Jesus for the transformation of the world, an earlier stop in your ministry was very much about that, in terms of gathering together a new community, a new start.
Yes. Well, and I would say probably all of my ministry has been about that, but probably more narrow. Although starting a new church and working with other churches to do that and other persons, that was also kind of enlarging for me. And having the privilege of being able to focus on people who are not already in the church, that was a big thing that was very satisfying and taxing all at the same time. At Joy, we had the privilege of being able to build together a community that had a lot of vitality, a lot of creativity. And there were a lot of folks, I think all of them would have told you this, that were struggling with various issues in life. And one of the reasons I think they were attracted to Community of Joy was because they were looking for community and they were looking for joy in their lives. And that was really fun. We had a large number of people who participated in small groups. That was one of the criteria to be a member. We had a higher demand for people who took the vows of membership, and we were always reminding one another that part of our growth as a disciple of Jesus was continuing to remember the people who were outside the church and what their needs, hurts, and hopes were. That was kind of our little catchphrase that we used.
Needs, hurts, and hopes. Did any of that focus on the folks who were outside the church, outside the community of Joy, come from your own biography?
Yes, I didn't grow up in the church. In fact, when I was 14, 13 and 14, I tried an experience in the church that didn't go well. It was in a denomination that was more exclusive. The only persons who could take communion there were members of that particular church. And all this time we were learning Luther's catechism about the meaning of grace and God's free gift of grace and God's openness. And then every week I subconsciously saw a disconnect between that and what we understood to be one of the primary means of grace, the Lord's table, how people were excluded from it. I'm sure they didn't view it as exclusion, but as someone on the outside, it felt like exclusion, especially on the day of my confirmation when I was being asked those questions from Luther's catechism and anticipating my baptism and confirmation and First Communion in that church, recognizing that my family wouldn't be joining me. And so I, as a 14-year-old, looked up at our poor pastor who was asking me my last question and said, "This is all a lie. You don't really believe it." Can you imagine the nightmare of that? But I actually so disturbed him, rightfully so, that he confirmed me and gave me communion without remembering to baptize me. But I walked away from the church thinking at that time in my life that it was just filled with hypocrites who liked to talk about Jesus but didn't really like to do what Jesus did. And where that changed for me was when I had two experiences. You've heard me tell this story before, my famous outhouse story. I'd moved in my senior year of high school to Adair Casey. And one of their traditions was at that time to have a homecoming bonfire of outhouses. And so with a friend, I went to this little open country church, and we took one of the outhouses. We brought it back to the bonfire, and Judy Christofferson saw her church outhouse on the bonfire, called her mom, and the principal called me. And there were two ladies waiting for me. One was her mom, Ardith Christofferson. The other one was a lady by the name of Gladys Nichols. And they were there when we replaced the outhouse, set it back on its foundations, painted it and everything. Well, as time would have it, Judy Christofferson and I started dating. And at one point after we were engaged, her dad invited me to join them in worship. And as you know, God would have it, it was the first Sunday of a month, which in many United Methodist churches meant that it was communion. And when the invitation was given, I chose not to go forward, remembering the experience I'd had in the past. When Gladys Nichols, one of the stern ladies I thought at that time, came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Bill, this is for you." And she meant it. And as I knelt there at that communion rail in that small open country church, my faith journey really began. And I know what it is to struggle without a sense of community. I know what it is to struggle without a sense of knowing that God is with you. God calls you to be part of something larger and to make a significant investment in your life. I've learned how much more eager God is to grant us healing than maybe we even are to seek it. And I want that for everyone. I want that kind of belonging that had been missing in all of my life and that I found have found in the church. Sometimes I get disappointed in the church because I see what God calls us to. I see our potential, and I see how often we get distracted in petty things that really don't matter much and, in fact, are counterproductive to that end of making disciples for Jesus Christ. To me, it all comes down to love, just as Jesus said in the Great Commandment. And how well we love God, how well we love one another and in the world, I think that's going to define our future.
Interesting. Shifting gears a little bit. What do you do for fun?
Well, I have several things that I do for enjoyment. One of the things that probably reacts me, that most people think about when they think of me, is riding motorcycle. I love to ride motorcycle. In part, it kind of helps me clear my head. And the reason is, as everybody is quick to point out, riding a motorcycle is dangerous. Mm. So when you're riding a motorcycle, you ought to be pretty well focused on what's around you. So when I get on a motorcycle, I kind of just let everything else go and focus on the ride, what's in front of me, what's behind me, what's beside me. And then the good thing, it's kind of become a spiritual discipline for me, is when I get off, then I ask myself, okay, now that you've gotten rid of everything, what's going to be important for you to pick back up again? So that's good, and it's enjoyable, especially when I have Judy riding with me. We really enjoy that. So I do that. We like to camp. We have a small RV. We enjoy doing that. Love spending time with my grandchildren and children. That's a great joy. Plus, I love to read and go to movies. And I enjoy a wide variety of movies, and that's fun to do too, especially when you get to go with someone and kind of talk about them afterwards.
You have a particular genre? Movie?
No, I really don't. When sometimes I'll confess this. Sometimes I really enjoy the catharsis of a escapist shoot 'em up action movie or a mystery, a drama. That those I like, good comedies. Those I enjoy. Mm-hmm. I've puzzled. To be honest, over my enjoyment of especially science fiction and the shoot 'em up movies, because a lot of them espouse values that are contrary to the ones that I hold. But for an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes it's just nice to live for a while in another world.
And then you have the world of your three grands.
Yes, and a fourth one on the way. Uh-huh. What we're expecting our first grandson, three beautiful granddaughters. And they really are renewing for me too. Renewing and exhausting at the same time, because when you're with them, they pretty much want all of their grandparents' attention. Sure. So you have to kind of focus there, which is great for me too. And they're just, all three of them, very precious, very sweet.
One last question for
you. Sure.
We've had transitions, new home, new workplace, new responsibilities, a future that's a chapter of a future that's just beginning to open up. What can we as friends, as colleagues, as United Methodists in Iowa do for you?
Well, I don't think it's so much as doing for me. I think it's doing for one another. Like I said earlier, it's really in the end all about how well we love God and how well we love one another, how well we love in the world. I think what's most helpful for all of us is to kind of remember that. And remember that we're not competitors in a process, but that we're sojourners together in a journey. And that God has called us to something significant. So I just want to remind us, as we love one another, we should also be a little tender with one another too. And recognizing that Jesus' call to forgive one another wasn't just a suggestion. It was too a commandment and essential to love. I think the more we live into that, the more we can all together be open to what God really wants to do in our midst for the world.
Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Art.